Welcome to another episode of the People and Performance Podcast. In this episode, we're going to consider ways that leaders can better align with the culture of an organization and drive performance based on agility, resilience, and innovation. Hey, this is Bill Bannum. Chris Bjorning and I are joined this time by Kevin Oakes, CEO and co-founder of the Institute for Corporate Productivity, an authority on next practices in human capital. Kevin is also the author of Culture Renovation, the number one release in a dozen Amazon book categories. Drawing on data from one of the largest studies ever conducted on corporate culture, Culture Renovation details how high-performance organizations such as Microsoft, T-Mobile, and MasterCard have successfully changed their organizational culture. Hey, Kevin. Chris and I are delighted to have you on the People and Performance Podcast today.
Oh, thanks, Bill. And thank you, Chris. Glad to be here.
Let's start with the obvious one, the big one, if you like, and then everything else should trickle from there. Kevin, in your view, from what you've written, from what you teach, please can you define what you mean by the term culture renovation?
Sure. So the culture renovation is the title of the book that I published earlier this year. And it's the culmination of a research study that my team and I had put together, really looking at what does it take to effectively change culture. Now, when you talk about that, normally people talk about the term culture transformation, and that was the term we were using going into our research. But as we talked to companies that were successful and as we looked at the data, it became very clear that the successful companies did not transform their culture. They didn't turn it into something completely different. Instead, like an old house, they kept what was unique or they kept what was hard to replace, and they renovated to improve the future value. And so culture renovation just became, for us, a better term to use when talking about how to change culture overall.
Okay, thank you very much. And a bit of a follow-up, but when is an organization in need of a culture renovation then? Maybe you can go into the details of that. And also, how has the pandemic made things a lot worse, blown certain things up, maybe highlighted certain issues and problems?
Yeah, as I've said, Bill, to a lot of companies, your culture has changed during the pandemic, like it or not. And so for many organizations, the decision is, are we going to be passive about that and almost reactive to what the pandemic has done to our culture? Or are we going to be proactive and try to shape the culture to be what we want it to be in the future? And so I think this, what we've gone through the last year and a half and continue to go through is certainly giving a lot of organizations cause to look at what do they want more of in their culture? How do they want the workforce to react in the future? Certainly the workforces that have been change ready, the ones that look at change not as something bad for the organization, but as an opportunity. Those are the organizations that have managed through the pandemic much better than other organizations. And I bump into it all the time where we have non-agile companies and the workforce just sort of dreads change and tries to keep things the way they are. That generally is going to be a low performing organization based on our data. And so we're constantly looking at those high performing organizations and trying to figure out, you know, what makes these companies high performing, and their attitude towards change and how agile they are is certainly one trait that always comes up in our research. But there's a lot of catalysts for culture change for sure, Bill. A new CEO is a big one. I'm working with several companies who have that scenario. Poor past performance is, you know, always a catalyst for change, or even an acquisition can be a catalyst to try to look at how do we want to renovate our culture going forward. But today it's very clear the pandemic has affected many cultures out there.
Recent studies show that 62% of consumers want brands to stand for something. Has this led to more brands taking a stand and making their purpose part of their culture?
Employees are looking at organizations that align with their values, that they can feel good about going to work every day for. And so more and more today, companies are being vocal about their stances. It's tricky, though. We have a very divisive political environment, obviously, in the United States. And some companies are not very comfortable in taking stances on certain issues, or certainly weighing in on, some of their political views. So I sympathize with that. I realize that you don't want to alienate your employee population or part of your employee population or part of your customer base. But I think several companies have shown, Nike is a good example, the more that you are true to who you are and take a stance, the more loyal your customers and your employees are going to become. And so we've definitely seen an uptick in companies being bold and taking a stance.
You suggest that all too often leaders don't really get the culture of their organization. So my question to you is, why are leaders often wrong about what their corporate culture represents? How can they start getting it right? And what's the impact when the top level is aligned with the culture?
I joke oftentimes that the worst thing a senior executive team can do is lock themselves in a conference room and decide amongst themselves what the culture is today and what needs to change going forward, because 9 times out of 10, they'll get it wrong. And the reason they get it wrong is that things get filtered by the time they rise to the top of the senior executive team, and messages often get diluted or changed along the way. And so the smart companies and the ones in our research who were very successful at changing their culture, they spent a lot of time listening to the workforce and gathering employee sentiment. And they did it through a variety of methods, not just one annual engagement survey. They often are frequently surveying the workforce or using some of the new natural language processing technology, which often is coupled with artificial intelligence, to let employees express their sentiments in their own words and then categorize that sentiment accordingly. Only when you really understand what's happening throughout the workforce, throughout all the geographies that maybe you touch, the departments, the divisions, only then are you gonna have a really comprehensive view of what is the culture today, and more importantly, what needs to change in the future. So I think it's imperative that any senior executive team thinking about changing the culture spend the time, spend the energy really understanding the employee sentiment.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. What advice would you have for business leaders when it comes to communicating change with employees?
Our research always shows that one element is evident in most high-performing organizations, and that's transparency. And I think a lot of companies have discovered the power of transparency during the pandemic. So, first and foremost, I think it's important to be transparent and communicate often. We also found that to be very important during the pandemic. In fact, a lot of organizations felt that their culture improved a bit, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, because they received a lot more empathy from senior leadership than they had before. And they also heard from senior leadership more than they had before. And so they were getting a better view into the personal lives of not only the leaders, but also their coworkers, as we all zoomed into each other's spare bedrooms and kitchens and saw their kids and their dogs and cats. We suddenly had a more holistic picture of the person as opposed to the work persona. And I think as you're communicating about culture change, all of those elements help. The more that you can be transparent about why you're making this change, what you hope to gain from this change, how you're going to enact this change, who's going to be involved. The less secrecy and the less ambiguity, the better.
In a newly renovated workplace culture, leaders must determine what desired behaviors will best support the company's purpose. How can they determine what those behaviors are, and how do they reinforce them?
Determining what behaviors you want and expect throughout the workforce is a very important early part of what you want to see in a culture renovation. And we found that organizations spend quite a bit of time on that, trying to make sure that their leadership expectations and behaviors aligned with what they wanted the company to be known for, what they wanted their internal brand and their external employer brand to be known for. Now, employees are not going to do what's simply written in a PowerPoint or framed on a wall. They're going to do what the leaders do. And that's why it's important to put the energy into training leaders on those behaviors that are expected. So that was one commonality we found in many of the companies that successfully changed their culture. They put the time and the energy and the budget into training senior level leaders, mid-level managers, and frontline leaders on the behaviors that they expected going forward. And it's not a science, it's really more of an art in trying to continue to reinforce what behaviors you do expect throughout the organization. But the companies that get it right, it's very clear that the employees have a very good understanding of the values of the company and aren't surprised by some of the behaviors of leaders. Again, they're going to do what those leaders do, so it's important to get it right up front.
Yeah, in this day and age of analytics and everybody needs the hardcore data, I love the fact that you just, you know, phrase this as an art versus the science, because it really is. And far too often I see the organizations, you know, just kind of say, well, what's in it for me and how's it getting done? And then they kind of miss that component of making it happen through, you know, behavioral examples for the workforce. So that's, I think that's really brilliant. So thank you for that response. Now, we're looking to wrap up. And as we do, we like to ask each of our guests this following question. From a culture and people processes perspective, what does a high-performing company mean to you?
Well, that's a term we use a lot, Chris. It's a term that is in every single one of our research studies. And what my research team does for each study is compares and contrasts the people practices of high-performance organizations versus low-performance organizations. And when we talk about high-performance organizations, we're talking about companies that have better revenue growth, profitability, market share, and customer satisfaction over the previous 5 years than their competition. That's a question we ask in every single study. We map market performance of organizations, and it's just fascinating to look at the responses, you know, when you get thousands of responses to a particular question or survey, and then delineate it by those companies that are having, you know, great market performance versus those who are not. There's always a difference in how those organizations are treating their people. So high performance to us is a very specific, you know, set of things that goes into what makes a high performance organization. But what's more fascinating is to just really look back and through regression analysis, pinpoint which human capital practices seem to really be impacting the bottom line. And while we come up with a lot of best practices when we do that research, what we're mostly interested in are next practices. And we define those as practices that we can see the impact. We can see that it's very much associated with high performance organizations, but it's typically less than 20% of companies that have implemented that practice. For us, that's a good clue that this is something other organizations should be thinking about and focused on.
I love that answer.
Me too. And we could go on for ages, Kevin, but we can't though, however, because time's up. Before we do wrap up, how can our listeners learn more about you? How can they discover more about I4CP? And I guess, how can they also get a copy of your marvelous book, sir?
Well, I'm not hard to find. So certainly our website at i4cp.com will have a lot of this information. But the book itself has its own website at culturerenovation.com. And so whether you've purchased the book or not, there's additional information out at that website, case studies on other companies. There's a monthly newsletter that we put together for readers. There's also a number of tools that organizations can use around assessments and dashboards in looking at their culture. So culturerenovation.com is a great place. I4CP.com is a great place to get more information.
Perfect. Well, I guess that just leaves me and Chris to say, Kevin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And certainly if we can be of any help in the future, certainly let us know.
This podcast is supported by Fidelo Inc., a consulting firm specializing in improving human performance. Through their products and services, Fidelo helps clients design, develop, and implement strategic integrated human resource processes and systems. Learn more at fidelo.com. That's FIDELLO.com.